Are we ready now? There we go. We'll go ahead and call the committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Vice Chair Keenan.
I'm waiting.
Excused.
Representative Beatty. Representative Binkley.
Here.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
Excused.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Excused.
Representative Falk.
Here.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Here.
Representative Gillette.
Here.
Representative Hamilton.
Here.
Representative Hastings.
Here.
Representative Hillegard.
Here.
Representative Hopkins.
Excused.
Representative Keel.
Here.
Representative Mercer.
Here.
Representative Moore.
Here.
Representative Nave.
Here.
Representative Stuart Paragoy. Representative Reed.
Here.
Representative Regeer.
Excused.
Representative Schillinger.
Here.
Representative Tuss.
Here.
Representative Windyboy.
Excused.
Chair Jones.
Here. Okay, quorum's present, so we can do business. We have three bills to hear, a number of executive actions. All bills have been heard on the House floor, so the hearing is primarily directed to the fiscal notes and the fiscal impacts of the bill. Please try to direct your comments to the fiscal portions of the bill. I believe the majority leader has a conflict in House education, so we'll have you go first. House Bill 408, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for accommodating my schedule. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Sue Vinton, V-I-N-T-O-N. I represent House District 56 in Yellowstone County. Today you have House Bill 408, Revised Student Scholarship Organization and Innovative Education Tax Credits. This bill very simply increases the cap on the allowable tax credits to $5.2 million beginning in fiscal year 2025, as you'll note on the fiscal note. I'd love to go into the specifics of this terrific opportunity for students, but understand that that's not the bailiwick of this committee. But I will say that the demand for these scholarships has far outweighed the availability, and that is why we are seeking to increase the amounts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there proponents? And to the greatest extent possible, the fiscal note, please.
Thank you, Chair Jones, and members of the committee. My name is Dylan Klapmeyer. Last name is spelled K-L-A-P-M-E-I-E-R, and I'm Governor Gianforte's education advisor. The governor supports House Bill 408 and encourages the committee to support it as well. Sticking to the fiscal note, this is the Big Sky Tax Credit Scholarship and the Innovative Education Program are reflected in the governor's recommended budget. As the sponsor said, it does increase the cap from $2 million to $5 million. And the reason that that's important is the student scholarship organizations that are working with the Department of Revenue estimate that there's actually about $9 million in demand. And we saw that at the current cap of $2 million, it was very quickly hit. And there are still low and middle income families that can be served. And on the public side, there were some issues with the funding stream and the funding disproportionately going to one district. We believe that this bill appropriately ensures that the funding on the public side will be more equally distributed around the state. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Additional proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Emily Dean, D-E-A-N. I'm the Director of Advocacy for the Montana School Boards Association. Today, I am also here on behalf of the Coalition of Advocates for Montana's Public Schools. That includes MTSBA, the Montana Rural Education Association, Montana Equality Education Coalition, Montana Association of School Business Officials, and the School Administrators of Montana. We specifically are here in support of, on the public side, we're supportive of this bill more broadly distributing the additional dollars to districts. And then we also are very interested in expanding the capital improvements and equipment necessary to support the programs that districts are providing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Additional proponents? Proponents online, Ross Izzard, perhaps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ross Izzard, I-Z-A-R-D, and I'm the Director of Policy and Government Relations for ACE Scholarships. ACE is a nonprofit student scholarship organization. It's the largest student scholarship organization in Montana and a participant in the Big Sky Scholarship Program. Here today to just express our strong support for the increase in the cap for that program and our excitement for what that'll mean in terms of the number of scholarships that we can get out the door for the coming school year. So with that, I will close out and make myself available for questions.
Thank you. Additional proponents? I do not see any online. Are there opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Eric Burke, E-R-I-K, last name Burke, B-U-R-K-E. First time before this committee this session, and good to see everybody. But we are standing in opposition to House Bill 408, and the reason we're opposed is related to the reasons we've been opposed to this tax credit since it first passed back in 2015. I could go through a long line of policy reasons. I would like to mention that we believe these are fiscally related, so I'm going to mention a few of them, and with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, but this is a 250% increase in the fiscal impact of this tax scholarship, and we think that's problematic because there are several reasons. Let me just briefly summarize them. Essentially, there's no accountability with the scholarships. They go to providers who have no testing, who don't have to meet any educational standards, and that's number one. The second reason, which I think is really the fiscal part of this, and our what we've been saying to many committees over time, is that this is a dollar-for-dollar tax credit, and you set a fiscal policy of having tax credits that are dollar-for-dollar, you're essentially allowing people to divert their entire tax bill to the issue of their choice. They don't have to pay for public prisons. They don't have to pay for public health. They don't have to pay for other public schools with a dollar-for-dollar tax credit. And one this large, that's $200,000, you're effectively taking those people off the books and allowing all of their tax dollars to go to a particular purpose. And we think whether that's for a public school or for a private school that's funded under this, we think that's bad fiscal policy and bad tax policy, and would urge you to reconsider expanding this credit. I could go into some others. The other one that I didn't mention in front of the committee, the House Tax Committee, is the fiscal policy of effectively providing a tax credit to an individual, and then this section of law does not require, nor does it disallow, that a person who actually receives the tax credit and receives a scholarship from it could have actually donated and gotten the tax credit in the first place. So you basically have people who can receive a scholarship but also have been a recipient of the tax credit that flows by providing the money. We think that's problematic fiscal policy over time as well. Bad fiscal policy, bad tax policy. For these reasons, we'd oppose the bill and would urge your consideration to not expand these tax credits.
Thank you. Additional opponents?
Excuse me, Mr. Burke. Who do you represent?
Sorry.
I
thought I said that, but I'm with the Montana Federation of Public Employees, MFPE.
Thank you.
And just so you're all aware, we represent school teachers, we represent public school employees, but also other state government employees throughout the state of Montana. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional opponents?
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, Rose Bender, B-E-N-D-E-R, representing Montana Budget and Policy Center. We rise in opposition to House Bill 408. We do not believe this is a good use of our taxpayers' dollars and would prefer that the money be directly invested in an equitable way in our public school system. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional opponents? Opponents online. Informational witnesses?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, and I work for the Office of Public Instruction and might be able to answer questions associated with the portion of the bill that's associated with the OPI. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional informational?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Finstad. That's F-I-N-S-T-A-D. I'm the Deputy Administrator for Technology Services in the Department of Revenue, and I'm here to answer any technical questions. Thank you.
Thank you. There's no informational online. So with that, questions from the committee. Again, the policy was already debated, so generally fiscal questions if possible. Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the bill sponsor.
Representative Vitton.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vinton, I'm wondering, I have kind of two questions that are related, actually three questions, but the first two are related. Can you remind me what the definition of innovative is, Mr. Chair?
Thank you for the question, Representative Gillette. I wasn't expecting a policy question.
It does relate to my
innovative
next
educational program. Is that your question, Mr. Chair, Representative?
Yes.
Innovative educational program includes transformational learning, advanced opportunity, any program service, instructional methodology, or adaptive equipment used to expand opportunity for a child with a disability, any courses provided through work-based learning partnerships, or for post-secondary credit or career certification, and technology enhancements, and capital improvements and equipment necessary to support an innovative educational program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up.
Follow-up.
That was really helpful. Thank you for refreshing my memory on that. Can you tell me what the cost per student was for the last funding cycle?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm certain I'm not the person to answer that, but just to clarify, are you talking about A and B? What is the amount of A and B funding, or are you talking about this particular scholarship?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair, Majority Leader Vinton, I'm talking for this specific endeavor. I'm suspecting we gave so much out to different schools, and in those schools, they probably estimated the number of children served, and so I'm curious about what is the cost per child served.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm going to look at OPI and see if Mr. Taylor could possibly answer if I could.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette, I know on the public side, the full amount of funding went out. I know that it went to five different school districts. I could get back to you with that information. So I'm assuming, and I guess I'm asking for a point of clarification. You're looking for the amount of funding that went to each one of those districts divided by the number of either the enrolled students or the A and B at those districts. Is that correct?
Mr. Taylor, I'm looking if they had... So I think what I heard is some of the applications might be for adaptive type situations. And so in that case, you know, individuals with disabilities. So in that case, it would, the denominator would be the children who require adaptive support or whatever that was used for. So whatever you think the denominator is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette, I'll do my best. We'll take the amount of revenue received at each district and divide it by the number of students with IEPs at those districts. Would that be beneficial? No.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Taylor, no, not necessarily, because in some instances it sounds like it might be for post-secondary kind of engagement that way. I mean, it seems like it's transformational learning. It seems like the denominator might be really different depending on the school and their application school and their application. So I don't know. I'm just like, my brain works like that. No matter whether it's this topic or any other topic, my brain thinks of cost per individual. And so that's how I'm thinking about it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette, the funding that went to each individual district is required to be spent for these innovative education programs. However, I'm not certain. I may email you offline to ask you further clarification. but I'm not certain we will be able to identify exactly the students that the expenditures were made for. We can show you the number, the amount of expenditure that was made at the district, and perhaps for its general overall purpose, but I can't pinpoint which individual students those expenditures were given to or made to, because we don't have that information at this time, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I have my third and last question. Thank you. For the bill sponsor, thank you.
Representative Benton.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One comment as to that. I do think it's important, and by the way, in full disclosure, I think that my district might have been one of the public schools that received probably the highest level of funds or, you know, yeah. Funds, tax credits, and so I'm definitely in favor of this. And at the same time, I'm just kind of thinking about, like, the number, you know, is it, I don't know, is it $500,000 per individual student, or is it $500 per individual student? That's kind of where I'm going with that. But my third question is could you tell us about the technical note on page 4 of 5? There. It's talking about, I think what it's saying is that the funds have to be, maybe in my layman's terms, maybe reverted back to the Office of Public Instruction. I think that's maybe what it's talking about.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, you are correct, but to fully answer your question, I will defer again to Mr. Taylor if I could.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette, I have to admit this was my technical note. The language of the bill refers to making a transfer, and although districts are a form of government, they're not the same level of government as to what these funds would be potentially able to be transferred. So if a district is unable to use the excess, I don't know that a transfer is the proper term here. I think they would have to remit the funds to the OPI to be deposited into that state special revenue fund. Mr. Chair, I think it's a real simple amendment to the bill that would make it clearer. Mr. Chair.
Change the word transfer to remit.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Over on this side first, Representative Wendy Boynton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for Paul Taylor.
Mr. Taylor.
I may just stay here. Mr. Chair, Representative Wendy Boynton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The same. Page 4 or 5 of technical notes, trying to get the get a further clarification. So, what you're saying with the when it reverts back to the transfers back to the state, what type of process does the OPI use as far as how that's determined?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Wendy Boy, there's a mechanism in the bill. Let me see if I have a copy of this thing here. I'm looking at the PDF version that I've printed out.
Mr. Chairman, are we allowed to look at the policy bill?
well.
No, go ahead.
I hope you'll allow me. Sure. What it says here, and I got to admit, I'm a little bit under the gun on maybe being behind on my understanding of the bill at the moment. Each district may receive funds from this program. It says that a district may not retain donations from this donation program that exceed the greater of either 50,000 or 15% of a school district's maximum general fund budget, or 20% of the total aggregate amount provided in the subsection. So it's saying that depending on the size of the school, school districts can be donated funds to, but if they're to receive funds in excess of a particular amount stipulated in this portion of the bill, any excess funds would then have to be remitted to the OPI and placed into a special revenue fund. There's a mechanism then that says that these funds then would be added to the, I believe it's the Transformational Learning Program, or is it Advanced Opportunities? To the Advanced Opportunities Program, to be distributed out through the mechanism that already exists for that program. Mr. Chair.
OK, Okay, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question's for Mr. Burke, please.
Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burke. So you made the comment that there was not any accountability. I know that relates to fiscal somehow, right, Mr. Chair?
Within reason, but yes.
Thank you. Can you just speak about that a little bit more? What would that look like, and what should it be so that we know that these dollars are being used properly or whatever you were referencing? Thank
you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Keough, we believe that back in 2015, the bill was passed. Back in 2015, there was a testing standard that has since been stricken. We also noted at that time that there's nothing in there about teacher licensure, nothing about accreditation, nothing about educational standards that we met by the students who are utilizing these scholarships. We thought that was problematic. We continue to think it's problematic. And when you get down to it, I mean, there's not a fingerprint requirement that would be enforced. There's really nothing for these educational providers that they really have to do to meet standards, and that's been the concern.
Thank you for that. One other quick follow-up while he's here.
Okay.
You also mentioned, and I guess I had never thought about this in relation to this bill, that someone could receive the scholarship and still that family, I guess, would get that tax credit too. What were you referencing? Did I get that right in my notes? Thank
Mr.
you.
Chairman, Representative Keough, this is something that has come up in recent months. As we've looked at this, we can't find anything that would deny somebody the ability to take to receive a scholarship for their dependent student. So, for instance, if I'm a father and I gave $100,000 to a scholarship organization, there's nothing in this that would allow, that would say that my son couldn't be a beneficiary of one of those scholarships, which to me, when you have a dollar-for-dollar tax credit and you're getting 100% of that in a tax credit, is it really appropriate for that money to then be given to me as an individual who got the tax credit? And that's what I was trying to point out.
Oh, thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a quick question for Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Taylor.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kerr Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Taylor, so I find school funding to be deeply confusing, and this tax credit is no different than the rest of school funding to me. I'm wondering if you can explain to me how there's a piece in here about how if 80% of the total number of credits, maximum number of credits are claimed in the previous tax year, it'll increase by 20% the total amount available for the next year. And yet in the fiscal note, I see in 2025, the total, net impact to the general fund is 5.2 million. And then the next year it's 6.2 ish million. But then the following year it jumps back down. I'm curious about how that all works, how that all drives out. And also, yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kerr Carpenter. I got a hold of this fiscal note just before the hearing, and I walked up here and I just sat down and I looked at that and I wondered the same exact question, and I will get back to you with that answer because I didn't put these numbers on here. I have no idea why they step up and then step back down. So I'm at a loss as well. As far as the mechanism for school funding goes, though, that's not necessarily a part of this, and I'm not clear myself, so I'll have to get back to you on that one. I'm a little confused as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is a follow-up for the sponsor then.
Follow-up.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good sponsor, Representative Fenton. I'm, again, looking at this, and I see the part about the 20%, and I'm wondering, is there a ceiling in this bill that I'm missing where it'll cap out at a certain amount, or are we just adding 20% on until the bill expires in 2029?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, the bill does have an expiration date of 2029, and if the parameters are met for the 20% increase, then yes, it would increase each year until that year.
Thank you. Additional questions from the committee? Representative Beattie.
Thank you, Chair Jones. Question for Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beattie.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Taylor, earlier Representative Gillette asked you some questions about essentially how many students were served and then what the, and how much funding was going to each student. I can see how complicated answering that question would be since this funding for the IEPs can be used in any of five different manners, some of which would affect all students in a district, some of which are targeted towards individuals. And so I appreciate the plight that faces you right now. Now, my question is, how difficult do you think it would be to solicit that kind of information, that kind of granularity for information from school districts and to aggregate that and report to the legislature in the coming interim, for instance?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Beattie, I'm not quite certain how I'm going to figure this one out. Traditionally, how grant, well, this is a form of a grant. This is a grant account funding works is there's a revenue source code that is created so that districts can report the amount of revenue that they received. You know, it's using GAAP accounting principles. And on the other side, on the expenditure portion, our state uses a fund structure that goes fund, program, function, object. There is somewhat of a concern for me because we will assign a program code for this revenue source type. The issue becomes program code 280 represents state and local special education expenditures. I have no clue how we're going to identify expenditures associated with this particular program as special needs or otherwise in this current situation. So I'm stumped as well at this point.
Follow up.
Not going to. Representative Beattie.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Taylor, I appreciate the fact that our accounting system doesn't allow us to probe any deeper than what we have right here. But what I'm looking at is an opportunity to. Let me step back before I say that. Clearly, school districts know when these funds are being used to, for instance, provide additional opportunities. So they ought to know by student how much money is being paid by student, and somehow they're capturing that information so that they can aggregate it and then report into our financial system. So what I'm contemplating is asking the school districts to provide us that granular information. Perhaps you and I can talk offline because I'm also contemplating making putting a requirement in the Section E companion bill that would be directing you to look for it. Before I do that, I certainly would like to collaborate with you because I certainly don't want to ask you to do something that's impossible. That wasn't a question. That was just a statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Taylor, please. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Taylor, looking at this this whole issue right now and just listening to the deliberation, I guess I have a twofold question. Question number one is how is this interfacing then with the equalization law for the state? And then the other part is that how are school districts that are from poor communities that do not have the wealth in their county be able to utilize this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paraguay, that's a policy discussion somewhat, but I'll try to I'll try to answer you in some form. These grants are set up currently so that a certain size grant can go to, or a donation can go to a school that has, somebody who's willing to donate those funds to the school. There's limitations on the expenditures. As far as equity or equalization, I'm not certain that there is that form in this bill currently.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Perry.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Taylor, there was a lawsuit probably now more 25 years ago in which there was concerning the unequitable funding of school districts across the state of Montana. And my concern, and I guess the issue that I see in just looking at the funding mechanism here, and since you're not able to answer just how you're going to hold these school districts with this extra pot of money accountable, so given all of that, I guess, how are we going to be in compliance then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Store Paraguay, the equity lawsuit was about the equity and levels of state funding towards schools. This isn't associated with state funding. These are donations made by private citizens to school districts. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Taylor. That's good and fine, but I guess the concern that I have and just looking at, eventually there'll be, we're going to tip the scale on equalization because you have private funding with public funding, and if they're being commingled or is public school monies being supplanted by private funding, that's the concern that I have with this issue, is that eventually down the road, 2029, we're going to have winners and losers in terms of availability of funding for students to be able so economic opportunity may not be available for all. I don't know.
Once again, Mr. Chair, Representative Store Paraguay, donations can be made currently. They don't have to be made through this particular mechanism. School districts do receive them from a variety of sources. This does appear to make a secondary mechanism that if districts were to receive donations in too great of a level, that those funds then would be paired with a state funding source. However, again, it's not necessarily only about state funding. This is more of a philosophical conversation that I can't dive into too much more.
Representative Stewart Paraguay.
Follow up for the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stewart Paraguay.
Mr. Chairman, Majority Leader, looking at, I'm just sticking with the funding and not necessarily the policy. Would it have been better to set up a separate trust fund so that this would be accessed by school districts instead of intermingling it or commingling it in public funding?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Stewart Paraguay. While you were asking questions of Mr. Taylor, I thought of a couple of examples. Number one, I agree with him. This is not a school funding bill. This is about donations and donations being made in the form of tax credits. For example, there's a school in northeastern Montana that received a donation from an individual in the amount of around $50 million. I don't know if you would argue that then creates an inequity, but that's exactly what happened, and that school was the, I'm sure, very grateful beneficiary of that. Now, I will also point out, Mr. Chairman, I apologize, it sounds like we're getting into policy, but...
And we are dangerously close on policy
if you look at the bill, on page 8 of the bill, it does say that if donations to a school district exceed a certain amount, then those funds must go into an account at OPI that is then distributed statewide. So again, I don't know if that answers your questions regarding equity, but in my mind, that seems pretty equitable. Mr. Chairman.
Okay, additional questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm a little bit confused as to who wrote the fiscal note. Is that Mr. Taylor? Or do we know?
Mr. Taylor. Ms. Nancy Hall.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Taylor, you were the one who wrote the fiscal note, right? Or a collaborative effort somewhere?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, I generally lay out the fiscal note and usually write the fiscal impact statement. However, it then goes to the Office of Budget and Planning so that they can adjust necessarily for their, you know, other reasons. So you may notice in the fiscal note, the first section is written by the Department of Revenue. I wrote the OPI section.
Now we're getting there. Thank you for that explanation. Now, Mr. Chair, I'd like to talk to somebody from the
redirect.
Then, because I really want to talk about the SSO part of it.
Department of Revenue redirect. Is that
Mr. Finstad is from the department, but I don't think it's quite. I don't think he wrote it.
You didn't write this, Finstad. Okay. What's his name? Mr. Finstad, can you answer this question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Finstad, and I'm sorry if I put you on the spot when you're not the right guy, so you know, brush me aside if that becomes the way it is. But I'm most interested in the student scholarship side of this, and I can't find in the fiscal note anywhere about the number of taxpayers that took the credit in the last 2 years, I guess it is.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I don't have that information with me, but I can get that for you.
Okay. Second question might be the same result, Mr. Chair, Mr. Finstad, and that is students who are benefited on the student scholarship side, how many students received scholarships from those donations?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, again, I don't have that with me, but we do get a report that gives us an aggregate number of the number of scholarships awarded and obligated through the student scholarship organization, so I can get that information back to you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I find this a little bit odd that we don't have a representative from OBPP who could answer these questions. It's we're flying in the dark here a little bit. So, Mr. Finstad, I'm going to let you off the hook. It's not your fault. And I will ask a question, I guess, of the sponsor.
Thank you.
Of the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, Majority Leader, when you proposed this proposed making the limit up to $5 million, but retained the 20% increase, did you calculate how much that would be in 29 by the time we're done?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I'm not a money person, but I will tell you in answer to your questions that during the bill in committee, we heard that 74 schools benefited from donations on the private sector side. On the public side, I'm sure that DOR could come up with the number of schools that benefited from donations, and I know that funding ran out, I believe, within somewhere under 10 minutes.
Follow up. Mr. Chair, Majority Leader, which funding, SSO, or which is the one I'm most interested in? SSO ran out in 10 minutes?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, are you talking about the student scholarship? Is that what
yes.
SSO you're
yes.
referring to? Yes.
So if I got this right, Mr. Chair and Majority Leader, you're saying that $2 million worth of credits were taken in 10 minutes, or...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, yes, that's my understanding.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Mr. Chair, Majority Leader, so you said at the beginning, demand outstrips availability here. Obviously, if it's done in 10 minutes, that's true. But what I'm concerned about here is good tax policy would say, if you're getting people filling up $2 million of the credits in 10 minutes, we're offering too much tax credit. So what was the purpose? Why 100%?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, that sounds like your opinion.
That would be a supply and demand issue, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, can you clarify your question, please?
My question is, why did you choose to make it still 100% credit when clearly the demand is so high you wouldn't have to make it 100% credit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the reason that I made that is because, again, the amount that is available is far below what is in demand, and there was an opportunity to increase that amount dramatically, and I took a more middle-of-the-road approach.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
I'm a little confused by that, Madam Majority Leader, but the other piece I guess I'm wondering is we often talk here about having skin in the game, and at 100% credit, the taxpayer has no skin in the game. And so how did you resolve that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, again, I would respectfully say that that's your opinion. I would say that as a taxpayer myself, I pay taxes, and having the opportunity to direct more specifically where those taxes go gives me an opportunity to do so. And if you're not calling that skin in the game, I don't know what is.
Leader, I'll switch questions. I guess we'll have to agree to disagree on that, because if I'm not putting any of my own money in, then I don't have any skin in the game. But my next question would be, on the fiscal note, maybe we need somebody else to answer this, it acts like in tax year 2026 that there isn't going to be an additional bump up. Because it's $6 million, this is on page 2 in the middle of the page. It's $6 million in tax year 25 and then another $6 million in tax year 26. But, of course, the way you wrote the bill is there's a 20% increase if it's used. So we can't, if we're using $6 million of credit, we've got to be $7.2 million the next year. Can you explain that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I did not write the fiscal note.
But you would, follow up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Madam Majority Leader, what would be your opinion, though, on this case? Are you expecting that we would not see an increase in credits there, or are you expecting that, because we had $6 million in 25, that we're going to be at $7.2 million in 26?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, one thing I have learned about estimates is that they are just that, and it's difficult to predict exactly what's going to happen in years going forward, and I can only speculate that that's what took place here in this fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam. I would just close with this thought, and that is, I did calculate the numbers because I am a numbers guy. The credit would be $11.6 million by the time this terminates.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question, I believe, for Mr. Burke, if he could come up, and I apologize if this is not a Burke question. But Mr. Chairman, Mr. Burke, with regard to your response to Representative Keogh's question, and I apologize for making you repeat this, did you indicate that there were no sideboards, and that's my term, not yours, there's no sideboards on the type of school that can take advantage of these tax credits? And I hope that's even a question that makes sense.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuss, I think that's exactly right. We've testified to the fact that the school doesn't have to be in the state of Montana. It doesn't have to have any of the standards I mentioned earlier. It can be, it's pretty wide open.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So just, and I don't like hypothetical questions, but I'm going to give you one. If I were to create a school of what's happening now in northern Montana, and I didn't have accredited teachers, it wasn't part of the kind of the state system, that school could be eligible to receive these tax credits?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuss, as long as you filled out the paperwork, and I believe you could, I think that's correct.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee? Okay, Paul Taylor, Mr. Taylor, I would have just a couple for you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Taylor, prior to this program coming into existence, could a person have made a donation, yet they wouldn't have got 100% write-off, but were they capable of making donations of disequal amounts to schools and across Montana, and was this done?
Mr. Chair, yes and yes.
Okay. When we talked about those donations at that time, was there any cap on the disequal amount of the donation? For instance, there are some schools that I know have received such significant donations that they can pay for, or for example, pay for college entirely for their students that attend that school. Was there any capping or transfer between the schools?
Mr. Chair, there is no requirement to cap a donation.
So, Mr. Taylor, the remarkable difference, and the only significant difference in the donations here, then, is the amount that can be written off on your taxes. Is that correct?
From my understanding, on the public side, that would be correct.
Mr. Taylor, are you aware of any of the rules associated with the SSO, the ACE Scholarship Organization?
Mr. Chair, no, that's not my public school side only.
Okay. It would be interesting. I would make a statement that Lou Jones could not cremate a school in their basement and get ACE scholarships. But since there's not a individual here from ACE Scholarship to ask that question, Mr. Izzard, Ross Izzard, please. Mr. Izzard, he needs to be promoted on the computer, please. Mr. Izzard needs to be promoted on the computer, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm here.
Mr. Izzard, on the ACE Scholarship Organization, if I were to create a school in my basement and call it by some name, would I qualify to receive ACE scholarships?
No, Mr. Chair. We review all of the schools that we partner with, and in that particular instance, a school like the one that you described would not be one of our partners for this program or for any other.
Mr. Izzard, do you have some standards and expectations on the schools you partnership with?
Mr. Chair, we do. We tend to be flexible with those to some extent because every private school looks a little bit different in terms of model or faith or educational approach. But yes, obviously in the interest of making sure that the program is serving the needs of students, we do tend to be selective at some level about the schools that we partner with for the purpose of handing out scholarships.
Mr. Izzard, would a scholarship given in Montana go be donated outside of Montana? A tax credit taken in Montana result in a scholarship outside of Montana?
Mr. Chair, no. I can't imagine a scenario where that would happen under our program specifically, nor have I heard of it happening in Montana or anywhere else in the country.
Thank you. Since we talked about so much policy, I figured we ought to ask the folks to answer some policy. With that, would the sponsor like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. Since there was such interest in the policy, I would urge any and all of you who are interested to review the video from the hearing in the Tax Committee. It was very interesting. And I appreciate the efforts being made by this committee, and will ask for a due pass on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. That ends the hearing on House Bill 408. And with that, we'll move to House Bill 311.
Good afternoon. You are a robust committee, Mr. Chair, and beloved Appropriations Committee. Wow. I'm so happy. This is my career move. I'm here with you, and you all have a reputation, a good reputation. My name is Mike Yakowicz, Yakawich, House District 51, and I'm here to address House Bill 311. And again, I cannot help but thank you for your service. And knowing how, knowing you on the floor, knowing you here, knowing you in the hall, you are working hard. That's for sure. All right, so this voucher, okay, is a specifically for room and board, which is not eligible. Room and board is not eligible for the substance abuse grant. So that's important to know. And it is a Kickstarter to substance abuse treatment. So we're not expecting it to address everything. It is a fiscally for 2024, $263,000, $337,000 for the next year, and then $300,000 for the next 2 years with a sunset in 2027. So I heard you like sunsets. I like sunsets. You like sunsets, Mr. Chair? I hope you like it. I hope you love it. But you know what I'm thinking is how awesome it is at sunset that we get a great study, that this was a great success. And I cannot help but thank Department of Public Health and Human Services, who helped me put this fiscal note together, because I can reassure you I did not do that. So the system costs are assumed to be minimal and absorbed by the department. And DPHS will establish programs and rules to allocate the appropriate money. It's a $100,000 limit. And I really, really like that. Just great wisdom there. Because, again, it's a kickstarter to treatment. We know a lot of places, and I'm thinking small town of Montana, who needs a little bit more boost in getting their client to substance abuse treatment. And so, long story short, why this bill came about was some people were saying, it takes time for my Medicaid to kick in. It takes time for my insurance to kick in. Actually, we think 35 to 45 days, I think, for Medicaid to kick in. So this is just a kickstarter to go into treatment, and room and board has been a real big part of that. 1,000 people are projected to be impacted by this, and I am really grateful for your thought, your consideration on this. Mr. Chair, beloved committee, I would hope that you would really consider this a do pass. I'll leave it up to proponents and opponents and witnesses, informational witnesses. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there proponents? Proponents? Proponents online. Opponents? Opponents online. Informational witnesses.
Good afternoon, Chair Jones, members of the committee. For the record, Rebecca DeCamara, that's DeCamara, and I'm the administrator for the Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities Division, and able to answer questions on the fiscal note if you have them.
Thank you. Additional informational questions from the committee. Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. DeCamara.
Chair Jones, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Camera, I'm just sorry, I tried to start up my iPad. I apologize, I might have to take this question a little later because I think I need my notes on my iPad, but I'm like nearly 100% confident that we considered this in Section B. We considered Medicaid eligible and non-Medicaid eligible, and for the non-Medicaid eligible, it was a higher percent of, bless you, of the FPL, which I think the 200% is there. I also know that we have presumptive eligibility, and so I guess I'm just not sure what this does that we're not already planning to do, because that's what I heard in Section B, that we were already doing this.
Sure. Chair Jones, Representative Gillette. So what this does is it focuses specifically on funding room and board, which Medicaid does not currently fund. The block grant can fund a set of services that are referred to as recovery home support services, but it does not specifically fund room and board for any long-term or ongoing program purposes.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cameron, is so within any of the waivers that the department is planning on doing, is the department planning on submitting a waiver to ask Medicaid if they would pay for room and board. Is that a thing in the future?
Chair Jones, Representative Gillette, no.
Okay, thank you.
No.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, have a question for Ms. Doctor. Oh, I'm sorry, Ms.
Chair Jones, Representative Mercer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And for the witness, I am along the lines that Representative Gillette started. I'm interested in this terminology of recovery home and wonder if that is the only context in which this voucher is going to be made available if the bill proceeds.
Chair Jones, Representative Mercer, so recovery homes are not currently Medicaid reimbursable. We're talking about ASAM 3.1, which is the addiction American Society of Addiction Medicine. It's low-intensity residential substance use treatment. A recovery residence is not a treatment setting.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
How many recovery home placements do we have in Montana presently?
Chairman Jones, Representative Mercer, are you referring to recovery residences for substance use purposes or ASAM 3.1 treatment?
Whatever is going to be covered by the voucher that would be authorized by this bill.
Okay, so that is not recovery residences. It's ASAM level 3.1, which is different, and we currently have 79 facilities that would qualify for this coverage potentially.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
And how is room and board presently being handled for people that are participating in those programs in the absence of the authorization that doesn't exist through House Bill 311?
So, Chair Jones, Representative Mercer, that is a business decision that a substance use provider makes. Many of the folks who are in this level of treatment are working and are charged a small amount of room and board. If they're receiving SSI, that can also be utilized, or the substance use provider can simply absorb it as part of their cost of doing business.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
How many people that are eligible right now for treatment in an ASAM 3.1 recovery arrangement are unable to access the care because of the inability to pay the room and board?
So, Chair Jones, Representative Mercer, what we anticipate this program being able to serve is approximately 300 individuals a year. So that's assuming that none of those individuals would be able to assume any part of that payment. So it's definitely a high assumption because there certainly are a portion of folks who are paying for some of that. That is not information that the department collects because, again, that's part of the business process of the individual provider.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So I want to make sure I understand the answer to my question. Is it, in fact, the case that you don't know how many people are unable to access ASAM 3.1 beds under the status quo?
Chair Jones, Representative Mercer, that would be accurate.
All right. Thank you very much.
Representative Beatty.
Chairman Jones, Representative, oh, correction, witness at the stand, at the podium. What is the agency's position on this bill?
Chair Jones, Representative Beatty, we're here in an informational capacity.
Follow up.
Follow up.
So, Chair Jones, and I heard your name pronounced so many different ways, I'm confused now.
It's DeCamera.
Ms. DeCamera. So I would take it then that the agency is ambivalent about the outcome of this.
Chair Jones, Representative Beatty, I think that we, you know, have some questions about this request for HART funds. There's currently $6 million in the HART fund request. We feel it's your decision to decide if this is how we want to spend those dollars.
Follow up.
Follow up.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Cameras.
to camera.
Camera. Almost got there.
Very, very close.
I noticed that there is a technical note on the fiscal note that suggests that these funds are to be used for matching funds. So I guess I'm trying to square how we can use them if we're not getting matching funds for them. Perhaps some elaboration on that?
So, Chair Jones, the $6 million in the HART Fund is intended to be used for several services. A large portion of that, $4.4 million, is intended to be used as the state share for Medicaid reimbursed services. These services using the HART funds will not be Medicaid, will not be matched with federal funds. It's just a flat $600,000 state special.
Final follow-up. Chair Jones, Ms. DeCamera.
Very good. Thank you.
I figured I'd get it right eventually. So there are programs using HART funds that don't receive matches?
Chair Jones, Representative Beattie, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Gillette, did you have another question? Because you had your hand up, and I see Mr. Hamilton just put his hand up.
Representative Hamilton should go first.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very quick. Mr. Chair, Ms. DeCamera, you've said this, but there was such a blizzard of numbers I kind of got lost. ASAM 3.1 clients, by their diagnosis, need 100% of those folks need residential treatment?
Chair Jones, Representative Hamilton, yes, that is part of the definition of ASAM 3.1 services.
A follow-up?
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair and Ms. DeCamera, then in the fiscal note, item number 6, it talks about this is built by saying the number of clients eligible would equal 80% of the full number being that have that diagnosis, ASAM 3.1. So what happened to the other 20%?
So Chair Jones, Representative Hamilton, that's specific to fiscal year 2024, and it's the allowance for not having the program up and running immediately. So only 80% of those eligible would be receiving the services.
Follow-up. Mr. Chair, Ms. DeCamera, so that you would anticipate then in future years 100% of these numbers that were listed that grow 329, 339, 349 would receive the...
Chair Jones, voucher. Representative Hamilton, because of the way we've costed out the service, so we've limited the service to a maximum of $1,000 per year per person. We are anticipating that with $300,000 a year, we could serve 300 people.
And last follow-up, please.
Okay.
Chair, Ms. DeCamera, so I don't understand about ASAM 3.1 clients, but are there any of those that might have some private insurance, and private insurance would cover a piece of that, therefore they would not be eligible for the voucher?
Chair Jones, Representative Hamilton, yes, it could be some private insurance, it could be SSI, disability income. However, that's very unlikely to get for the purposes of substance use treatment, and it could also be that they have a job and are paying part of the cost for their room and board out of their pocket.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cameron, I'm just kind of piggybacking on what Representative Mercer and Hamilton have been asking. I just want to make sure I have this straight in my head. So there's, in any given year, about 300-plus individuals who the department anticipates paying for room and board, correct?
Chair Jones, Representative Gillette, yes.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
And then, but you're also saying at the same time that currently we do have individuals that are engaged in ASAM 3.1, and yet they are paying for their room and board successfully.
Chair Jones, Representative Gillette, yes.
And follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
And is it the department's intention that somehow facilities segregate those who are able to pay versus those? Because I see the numbers continuing to increase, so it doesn't seem like you're segregating those people out.
So, Chair Jones, Representative Gillette, the intent is that the provider who's offering the substance use service will do the financial evaluation to determine whether or not the person has the ability to pay. If they have the ability to pay for the room and board using a different set of funding, then they would be responsible for doing so. This is similar to what we're currently doing with our block grant funding for substance use disorder and our limited residential recovery services.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Sir.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Yakovich, it's probably in here, I apologize. I've been, like you, reading so many bills lately, but could you point out in here where it requires the providers of the ASAM 3.1 to basically do an assessment on ability to pay?
Good question. If you find it before me, let me know.
Okay.
You found it? Someone found it?
Oh, okay. Camera.
Okay. Redirect.
Redirect. Thank you.
Chair Jones, Representative Gillette. So the process isn't fleshed out in the bill, but if you take a look at new section 1.2 down at the end where the room and board not otherwise covered by insurance or another assistance program language is.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
Mr. Camera, so it does say room and board not otherwise covered by insurance or another assistance program, but that doesn't address a person who's working and has the ability to pay, Mr. Chair.
Chair Jones, Representative Gillette, that's a valid point.
Thank you.
Representative Mercer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of additional questions for Ms. DeCamera, if I may.
Ms. DeCamera.
Ms. Chairman, Ms. DeCamera, I'm looking now at page 1, line 23, where the eligible individual would be 14 years or older. Help us understand the need in the population that hasn't reached majority that wouldn't be CHIP eligible or otherwise eligible. How big a cohort would you estimate would be eligible in that 14 to 18 age group?
Chair Jones, Representative Mercer, I would have to bring that information back.
One final question, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cameron, now I'm on the next line, have an annual family income at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. How would the calculations change if we dropped that? Let's say that we moved it to 150%. What would that do, if anything, to what you've projected out as the annual expenditure?
So, Chair Jones, Representative Mercer, the annual expenditure is driven by the appropriation.
Okay. So.
So we could serve more.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wendy Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to the young lady here. So when you're talking about 200% of the poverty, what is the poverty rate right now, and how does that equate from the 200% of that?
So, Chair Jones, Representative Wendy Boy, the FPL of 200% is what our current substance use block grant is serving. That's why we're continuing with that population. The intent largely of the block grant is to serve folks who do not qualify for Medicaid, so from anywhere from 139 to 200% of the FPL for a family of four. That's a income of $49,000, and for a family of one, it's approximately an income of $29,000.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman.
Additional questions? Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I almost feel like I need to be a Mr. Beatty right now. And if you're in state administration, you may understand what I say. So, we have brought this before you, not DPHHS. And it was the call of the community that there is a substance abuse problem. And we just heard on the floor about fentanyl. If you need numbers, how many people need treatment, just go downtown Helena and you'll find out there's a serious need for drug treatment. I did not ask nor expect DPHS to do the bill. It's my bill. However, I am so grateful for you, DPHS, for their stalwart, be willing to stand with me, or at least support me. So not sure about many, as I alluded to. Yeah, I mean, we could do a study, an interim, right? Let's do an interim about how many people need treatment. Then we'll pass the money. But I think we know already in our heart of hearts. Okay. You signal me like this here if I do too much. But Mr. Beatty does it even better, you know. So, boot on the ground. My boots are on the ground. See my boots? They're worn out. Walking the South Side, I run into a lot of this issue of substance abuse. The Chamber of Commerce stated in Billings. Okay. Oh, there he is. Okay. So the Chamber of Commerce, Mr. Beatty, I really respect you a lot. And so when you're state administration, you just like rock with his passionate talk here, you know. But what I mean to say here is that even the Chamber of Commerce said if we had an ability to bring people into treatment, one of the bigger, and the City of Billings did a research on this, was the room and board. Getting people over that. So I've seen it firsthand. Businesses are taking a heavy hit. So what we're trying to do is help the businesses. They're going to keep on doing it. They're going to keep on taking care of these people, no matter if we give them money or not. But what if we gave them more and helped them and be more successful? Finally, Representative Gillette, you all asked so many great questions. It's like you rock. You all rock. Okay, so on page 2, it's just about number 19, many submit vouchers for payment providing to a qualifying individual as soon as costs are incurred or if any other sources are not immediately available. That answers your question there. Another one is, which is great, shall report any charge shall collect and report outcome. That's what we want, right? We want to be fiscally responsible to advocate for some money and then make a change and do a study and see that we did make a change. So I don't think I'm asking you for a lot. But on behalf of the community that is struggling with meth, fentanyl, alcohol, all of these things, I believe this will really make a difference. And I hope I answered most of your questions. I really want to thank you for your robust questions. I ask you, Mr. Chair and beloved committee, and all of you, for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. That closes the hearing on House Bill 311. And at this point, we'll move to House Bill 381.
Well, what I want to know is why I always have to follow Yakovich. Holy cow. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Larry Brewster, last name Brewster. I represent House District 44, and I actually served with Yakovich for 4 years on a city council. So this is not new to me. I'm here to present House Bill, 381. This is a bill that changes how they qualify properties that have been contaminated by methamphetamine to try and have a better handle on cleaning up those properties. If you look at the bill, just briefly, in Section 1, what's been changed is this particular used to say it's been contaminated or used as a clandestine methamphetamine lab, or it has been, and then it had smoked, and now it says or has been contaminated from smoke from the use of methamphetamine. So briefly how this process works is a police officer would go to a home, and if it was his opinion it had been contaminated, he would go back out to his car and fill out his incident report and check a little box on his report. And then the department would notify the public health officer and DEQ that there was suspected contamination of a methamphetamine place. DEQ would come out and make an assessment, and if they determined that it's indeed contaminated, they would require that it be cleaned to a certain standard, and then they would verify that. In the meantime, they would put that property on a list of properties that have been contaminated by methamphetamine, and after they have certified it, then it's taken off that list. That's essentially what happens. The fiscal note on it is a little higher than I thought it would be, of course, but I signed it because I would rather we clean up all those houses than leave a few stragglers, because we estimated low. And I wouldn't want you to be surprised. So that's essentially what the bill is, and you can see the cost. What they estimate is a couple FTEs, I think, to handle the additional workload. One thing that surprised me is the chart shows an average of 1,926 methamphetamine drug seizures in 20 and 21. That's a lot of drugs. So anyway, with that, I'll listen to the proponents and opponents and get back to you. Thanks.
Are there proponents? Proponents online, I see none. Are there opponents? Opponents online? Informational witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rick Thompson, R-I-C-K-T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N, and I'm the Bureau Chief for the Waste Management Bureau at the Montana Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm here as an informational witness.
Okay, additional informational. Seeing none, questions from the committee. Okay, Representative Gillette, then I'll move to the side.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a lot of questions and stuff today. Sorry about that. A question for Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thompson, it says that DEQ currently possesses 1.5 FTEs that are dedicated to the methamphetamine cleanup program. And I'm wondering how many incidents per year does that 1.5 FTE currently manage, Mr. Chair?
It varies, and the number isn't exact. We do receive quite a few phone calls a year, and staff spends time on the phone up to 3 hours per call in dealing with homeowners or property managers who have meth-contaminated buildings. So I don't have the exact number, but we approximated based on the Board of Crime Control statistics of how many meth reports have been submitted to the department, and we took at least assumed that at least half of those have been contaminated by smoking of meth, as stated in this bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So, Mr. Thompson, are you saying that 963 of those, the assumptions in here say that there's a little less than 2,000 methamphetamine drug seizures between 2020 and 2021, and that this fiscal note says that half of those would be to individuals where it's just smoking is just attributed to that? And I guess I'm just trying to get to that 50% of what is the basis for assuming that it's 50%? Because I'm with Representative Brewster. I think this fiscal note is high. I'm thinking that you might not even need another FTE to do this program, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette. Is it Gillette? Again, the numbers when this bill was first passed, at least the reporting requirements for methamphetamine was done two sessions ago. We still did not have exact numbers. So I'm reflecting on what statistic we do have, because not all of the incidents are reported to the department. So we're going basically off the statistics for what the Board of Crime Control reports, as well as what I do know is staff time spent on dealing with homeowners. And it is quite a bit of time spent in looking at the assessments of a property, going out and making sure the work plans to clean up is accurate and detailed enough, and then following up with the assessment to make sure the building is certified as fit for inhabitation again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just a comment. I mean, I think what this is saying is the little less than 2,000, as I understand it, is the number that's reported, the incidents that are reported to them. So I guess I'm still just pretty unclear about how we came to that 50% mark on there that would be to smoking, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Wendy Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe a question for Quinn, or even you. I know that you have your algorithm sheet you're pulling out. Adam or Mr. Holzer, I know there's a threshold that we have as far as appropriation bills moving forward. Was that 100,000 per biennium, or is it?
It is 100,000 on biennium or 50,000 per
annual,
so it did exceed.
Oh, okay.
The amount.
And the reason why I ask, Mr. Chairman, is because looking at the numbers, and I'm in agreement with the sponsor of what this deal is, and I know that this is not only a problem for the rest of Montana, but also in my community. And I think that this 90,000 that this is saying, whether it be an under count or over count or whatever, this is just buckets of the problem that happens. And I say that because in my own community, we have over 500, a list of over 500 on the waiting list for housing. But yet, as I drive through my community, I'm seeing a whole bunch of abandoned houses because of contamination. So I think that, for my local governing board, they have to rob Peter to pay Paul just to make this happen for that. So I think that, these numbers are probably way lower, because I feel that not only my community, but other communities along the High Line, the reservations do have this problem, because we are targeted by the cartels. And I seen a shocking news report here recently, and our attorney general had mentioned about the influx of fentanyl, on how much rampage that's happened on it, and it's becoming more of an issue, and it's going to be even more so if we don't address it somehow. Because in the last 6 weeks, I had seven fentanyl deaths in 6 weeks, and you know, it's not going to improve any. And I think that this is something that if we get to that issue, root of that issue, better. So thank you for that, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beattie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beattie.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Thompson. So I'm following on Representative Gillette's line of questioning, and I'm referring here to items 9 through 12 in the fiscal note on page 2. And you know, as I work this out, if I'm understanding this correctly, and I guess I'm going to run through a few things and ask you if I've got it right. So you've made some assumptions that lead you to believe that there will be 963 incidents per year that you would have to work on. Of course, you're already working on some incidents right now. But if I take that 963 and multiply it by 3, as you did in number 11, I get to 2,889 hours of staff time. If I divide that by the typical work number of hours in a work year, which is 2,080, I get to about 1,900, correction, when I divide 2889 by 1.5, I get 1,926 hours per FTE, which seems to be doable within a standard work year. So it would seem to me, I can't see how you can justify another FTE, because it seems like, based on the assumptions you've made here, you have sufficient staff time to cover this workload.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beattie, again, we were just, again, looking at the number of reports of meth-contaminated structures reported, and taking 50% of that, or half in that, assuming that those would be contaminated by smoking. So again, just like you did, we just worked the numbers, essentially saying that it takes about 3 hours of staff time to deal with a call from a homeowner or a meth contractor or a cleanup contractor, et cetera. So, and then saying that a staff time, the rough FTE time frame or worked hours worked for the DEQ employees, 280 hours, and just did the math on that and came up with one FTE.
Follow up. Okay, it's Chairman Jones, Mr. Thompson. So I think we're doing the calculations the same way, but I come up with you only need about 1.5 FTE to do that projected load. In that case, I don't see how you can justify asking for another FTE unless you've made a mistake and are undercounting the amount of effort that's going to be necessary.
Well, we before the number was 1,926, that was just the number of reports, but we're adding now the smoking of meth. So in addition to, we might have more reports in on top of that number. So it again, it's subjective.
Final follow-up, Mr. Chairman Jones.
Final follow-up.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Thompson, so it would seem to me then you're treating the 963 properties as new workload for you. I'm not quite sure I completely buy off on that, but I do understand the position you're making. However, if you are double counting, then perhaps the most you should be asking for is a half of FTE, but I think we need a few more figures. I'd like to understand better what your current workload actually is in terms of number of incidents that are reported, and it would also be helpful to know how many of those you believe would be included in the 963 properties. And that's not really a question, it's just a statement.
Certainly, and we could work on that as well to provide that.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Thompson, at the risk of the chairman shutting down the meeting when we're talking about a fiscal note, this one is a dog and a cat. This one isn't a substantial one. I'm confused by the methodology. You know, people have been, unfortunately, smoking meth in this state for over 20 years. And I understood why we had this statute back in the day when we had clandestine meth labs that were cooking in houses, because when you were cooking in houses, you clearly had contamination. That whole time, though, at least a 20-year continuum, we've had people smoking methamphetamine in houses, and I guess I never understood that alone would be a basis to say that there would need to be a cleanup. The thing that I am confused about on the methodology is instead of going to the Border Crime Control and looking at seizures, which is a law enforcement activity that could happen out on a street, or it could be intercepted by the Highway Patrol, it could be intercepted by FedEx or the Postal Service, those are all seizures. But I don't know why we would be looking at seizures as a basis for the methodology for the fiscal note, as opposed to calls from people who say, I believe someone smoked methamphetamine in the house, that law enforcement is now needing me to clean up. That, to me, that would be a better proxy. How many calls has DEQ received in the current biennium or fiscal 2021 and then fiscal 2022-23, how many calls have you gotten for cleanup based upon use in a residence, not seizures? That would seem to be a better roadmap in terms of what we're looking at here going forward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, that was a long question, but I'll work my way through it. I'll go back to the tenet of the bill and the previous bills. This was not to address seizures. It was to address contamination, which is what our department has purview over, and law enforcement reporting the contamination of an inhabitable structure someone lives or work in. So again, we have received over the last reporting period, I think over 100 calls, and I may be off on the numbers, I'd have to go back to staff on that, but we have received quite a few phone calls, and we do have the registry, which is kept up to date on our DEQ website. The request, though, to clean up and for us to follow up with the cleanup contractor is at the behest of the homeowner. So even though law enforcement does report, the potential could certainly go up as more residents or more homeowners or landowners, property owners call in and would like to get a certificate of fitness, meaning that the home is being cleaned up by a certified meth cleanup contractor, and they want DEQ to sign off on the plans to clean up as well as the actual work that was done. So, again, I hope that answers your question, but, again, we're not dealing with seizures.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Thompson, are you saying that because there hasn't been anything in 7510-1306 that required law enforcement to report contamination that occurred through use, you think that there's a risk that there is a much larger universe that hasn't been calling the department up until this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, that is correct. We do think the number could go up with the addition of smoking now being reported.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thompson, please forgive me if this is a little bit repetitive. If I understand this correctly, if someone has a piece of property that has been designated as contaminated, they call your agency, and whoever, the person who does this job, tells them what they have to do to clean up, maybe recommends who can do that for them, something like that. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nave?
Yes.
That is correct.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
And then after that, supposedly the cleanup occurs, and then they get a hold of you again, and you need to certify that the cleanup has been done properly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nave, that is correct.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
In order to do that, do you go out to the property and view or walk around?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nave, that is correct, or a certified a department certified cleanup contractor can supply that report.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Okay, because where I was getting to was how to handle, you know, across a state as big as this, because I assume your office and the person who's doing this is here in Helena. And I was going to ask, if you had another person, would they also be based in Helena, or would you base them in someplace on the other side of the state to get better coverage?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nave, we only, as noted, the current staffing level is 1.5 FTE, and they serve the entire state of Montana from Helena. And currently, we do not have offices in the regional offices in the state or staff on either side of the state.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Beatty.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beatty.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Thompson, you alluded to having certified contractors conducting the inspections that are necessary. Is operational funding provided within your budget or within the budget of the methamphetamine cleanup program?
The funding that we get in the Mr. Chair, Representative Beatty, the funding that we get is primarily from the general fund, so that's all we have to provide the training for the contractors as well as staffing.
Follow-up, Chairman Jones.
Follow-up.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Thompson, I guess I wasn't clear on this, and that's my fault, not yours. But what I'm getting at is in order to, for this, the entirety of this program, part of it is your staffing that you have in Helena, but you must have funding that's available to both train contractors, and then you, I would assume that you have to pay them when they conduct an inspection for you. Is that so?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beatty, that is correct. And I do believe, and I'm not sure, the funding, the operational funding, does come from a general fund allocation for the meth probe.
Thank you.
Representative Reed.
Chairman, for Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Thompson, Chair, what is your relationship with the multiple tribal governments? And how do you respond to, say, trust land on reservations? What is your relationship with those governments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzpatrick. Reed. I'm sorry. Oh, it's way over. Sorry. Currently, I do believe we respond to the results or the reports from law enforcement, whether it's tribal or state. I don't think there's a distinction.
Follow up, but a kind of a statement. Following Representative Wendy Boy's statement, the number of houses that sit on all reservations across the state is very astounding when you come right down to it. And whether it was cooking or whether it was long-term use, I do believe that that is part of the housing crunch that's on reservations. So that's part of the statement.
Additional questions from the committee? Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's a robust process here, as usual. I need to mention that DEQ didn't bring this bill. This was actually brought on behalf of the City of Billings. They felt like they needed a few more tools to deal with meth problems in Billings. And as you know, usually the big problems start in the big city, and pretty soon it's everybody's problem. So they thought this would be a good tool. It incentivizes landlords to be more choosy about who they rent to, and it when people move into a new home, they have some assurity that some things have been remediated and made the place more livable. Appreciate all your good questions, and I encourage you to support this bill, and thank you very much.
That closes the hearing on House Bill 381. I have about three questions here, and then we'll take a brief recess for the Democrats to caucus. House Bill 381, we just heard that. Is there somebody planning on bringing an amendment for House Bill 381? This is the one we just heard. Larry Brewster's bill. Okay.
Mr. Chair, sorry, it's the first time I've been on this committee, but I don't know how this goes, but I just don't feel like that fiscal note is correct, and I'm not sure how to deal with that, but you know, my gut reaction is to put an amendment in there that would make them do it within their existing funding, but maybe that's just maybe that's just me. But is that a thing?
So you could bring an amendment. Again, they don't have to do that, but you could bring an amendment.
They don't have to do it, that Mr. Chair.
They have an option of not doing the program if they can't do it with the existing staffing.
Yeah.
So we can always put a suck it up amendment, and they can say, "Well, you told me to plow the snow, but you didn't give me a snowplow driver, so we didn't plow the snow." So I'm happy to wait if you're going to get a suck it up amendment, but if we're not going to get an amendment, then I hate waiting on bills. It's entirely up to the first.
I don't, maybe I could just ask you at the break and we can talk about it, about what the pluses and minuses and so on of that is.
Okay, so we potentially may act upon this. House Bill 311, Yakowich's bill. Is there interest in amendments on Yakowich's bill? And again, if people want to amend it, I'm happy to hold it, but I'm just asking. I always give the option. Are there amendment interests in Yakowich's bill? If there's nobody going to amend Yakowich's bill, then we will act upon 311 after the Democrats have had a chance to caucus. And I imagine, is there amendments on House Bill 408? And I'm almost certain that is the okay. All right. So I will hold this bill waiting for amendments, but if you have amendments, please pursue them on Vinton's bill. So we'll try to act on it by the end of this week. Okay, so 311 for sure, 381 maybe, 408 no. And in the other bills, of course, just so we're clear, is it's 301, 321, 362, and 375. So 301, 321, 362, and 375. So that'll be what we will act upon. We are in recess for 10 minutes. We are at recess.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wendy Boy.
So you're saying that we get, Democrats are going to caucus so we can kill some bills, or?
Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the committee back to order. And we'll begin with the Yakovitch bill. All
right.
Yeah. Okay, what number?
311 was Yak's, wasn't it?
Yes, you want to start with that?
Yeah, it was the last one we did.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 311.
It's been moved to pass on House Bill 311. That's the bill we just heard by Representative Yakovitch. Is there additional discussion? Additional discussion? Okay, Representative Gillette.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I had all that time, and here I am. Yeah, I mean, what I would say is what I didn't hear in that bill was that there was unmet need. That did not come through loud and clear. It just seems like now the state is taking over paying for what organizations have been figuring out and paying for this whole time. Yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't that convincing to me. I believe there's already HART funds that can be allocated should the department want to do that. So with that, I'm going to be a no, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mercer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I was struck by the fact that the department was just here informational. I couldn't really tell what they thought about this in terms of whether it was something that they thought was a gap that needed to be filled or authorization that they needed to have. And I was curious from people on Section B, you know, what the perception from people on Section B is with respect to is this something that we need to do that is unmet at the present time? Because I had the same take that Representative Gillette had, that it seemed like the informational witness was saying people are being admitted, they are being able to meet room and board either because of some offsets from the provider in addition to some insurance and some SSI. And I didn't come away thinking that she was making a case the department thought that there was a big need. So I'm curious about what the Section B folks think.
Okay. Well, first I'll go to Representative Beattie, then I'll ask Section B.
Thank you, Chairman Jones. So I guess I'll riff off of what my colleagues down the table said, but I come to a little different conclusion. When a department shows up as an informational witness and refuses to take a position on a bill, as far as I'm concerned, they don't care where that money's going to go. So I think Representative Yakovitch has a great bill here, and I'm going to be a yes on it.
Okay. Vice Chair Keenan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would concur with what Representative Gillette said. What the people that are wanting to get served right now are being served. They're figuring it out, whether it's a private pay and insurance or, as I believe they said in there, that the recovery homes, those facilities are covering it in their overhead. So I would resist for another reason, that the $6 million, which is going to be 11%, I believe, at the end of this session for the HART fund that goes to DPH for these types of things, that's a pool of money that I'm surprised that Representative from Anaconda hasn't found yet.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on page 1, line 24, it talks about that this money would go to people who have an income of 200% of poverty or lower. The line right above it says 14 years of age and older. Room and board is an issue for providers. If a person goes into a treatment center for substance use disorder, then, and they have Medicaid, the provider receives the Medicaid rate, and supposedly the room and board is in the rate. What we know is the rate would go a lot further to cover workforce shortages if there was some assistance to help with room and board. That's one thing. The other thing is there are places where folks, especially kids, go and have get treatment where there is no money for room and board. Room and board is a big deal, and so I'll be supporting it. And my experience with the department is sometimes if it's not their idea, they don't support it. So,
Representative Wendy Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to agree with my colleague here who just got done speaking, because when you start to delve into the percentage of poverty level, 200% or whatever the amount is going to be, you know, you're only looking at 27 to 49,000 per year, like it was stated by the individual. And when you're only making that much there, you know, it's either going to be food on the table or services such as this. And it's unfortunate that, you know, that the society is changing so much that taking consideration, like I said, that TV show, news show that was shown here in the last couple of weeks about the cartels flying stuff into Butte and all these other urban areas. I mean, this substance abuse is huge, and I've seen that the impacts about what that is. And I tell you, man, methamphetamine and opioids and fentanyl and all that don't know any discrimination. So this is going to be it's either one of those things where we do it now or do it later. So I'm also going to be a yes.
Okay, additional discussion? Representative Gillette, then we're going to do a roll call vote.
Mr. Chair, I would just point out that on page 1, line 25, that line is stricken, so lacks the financial means to immediately pay for the cost of treatment and related services because, and then it goes through, because they don't have a payment source, because they haven't been approved for Medicaid yet. Yada, yada, yada. So, I mean, I guess I'm just still uncomfortable that we are going to pay for someone who has the means to pay. That's like literally what that strikeout means. So, just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, additional discussion? Vice Chair Cafaro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But the line above it does say 200% of poverty or lower. So it does... I don't know, I guess that if you think that's the means to pay, then, but it does have a definition.
Okay, roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
No.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Representative Farrell.
Yes.
Representative Kirk Harpender.
Yes.
Representative Falk.
No.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hastings.
No.
Representative Hellegard.
No.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
Yes.
Representative Mercer.
No.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Knave.
No.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Yes.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
No by proxy.
Representative Schillinger.
No.
Representative Tuss.
No.
Representative Wendy Boy.
Yes.
Chair Jones.
Yes. Passes. Bill passes 1211.
Let's do that. 381. Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 381.
Gates moved to pass on House Bill 381. That's the bill by Representative Brewster we just heard. Okay, discussion on the bill.
I'd move to amend it to add suck it up language, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Johnson. Ms. Johnson, are we capable of adding a line that says that this program must be completed with resources, within existing resources?
I think I would just add it as a new section at the bottom of the bill. I don't think I'd put it in code.
Just add it at a new section at the bottom of the bill, as this must be completed with existing resources.
Correct.
Okay, and you're okay doing that?
Yes, I am, Chairman.
Okay, so there's been an amendment moved, a suck-it-up amendment. Discussion on the Suck It Up Amendment. Questions been called? Oh, I'm sorry. I did see Beatty's hand right before I said that. Representative Beatty.
Jones, so this was a confusing fiscal note, I think, the way it was drafted. But, you know, based upon a casual conversation I had in the hallway with the representative from the agency, I actually think they were lowballing their numbers in terms of what they're required, because the 1.5 FTE they're using right now also work in their asbestos abatement program. So trying to figure out how these numbers actually work, I think, is complicated. And although I was initially inclined towards a suck it up amendment, I'm not convinced that the agency is actually staffed well enough to do this job. So in this particular case, I won't get on board with my good friend from down the aisle.
Okay, additional conversations, Representative Wendy Boy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to stand with Representative Beatty on this, because this issue hasn't even touched the surface as far as what's going to happen. Like I said, that whether 90,000 is too little or too much or whatever. Whatever the cost is going to be, it's still going to be a pay me now or pay me later situation.
Okay, now I think I'll take the question.
You can close. I want to wrap up. I guess the point I was trying to make with the witness is that we've evolved, if you can call it that, from being a place in which people were cooking methamphetamine in structures. And that process of clandestine meth making caused places to be uninhabitable. At the same time, we had a bunch of people that were smoking methamphetamine, and they've been doing that for a long, long, long period of time. I don't know if we are going to have an explosion of properties added to the list based upon this new reporting requirement, because this has not been something that has been recognized as a big issue. Here we are in 2023, and this is the first time that I know of that we've ever been asked to contemplate broadening the reporting requirement. So it may be the case that they come back and they say this is a larger problem than, and the reporting has required us to put a lot into this, but I guess I'm not persuaded at this point, and that's why I said existing resources.
Okay. Roll call vote on the amendment.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beatty.
No.
Representative Binkley.
No.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
No.
Representative Kirk-Carpenter.
No.
Representative Falk.
Yes.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hellegarde.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
No.
Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Knave.
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
No.
Representative Reed.
No.
Representative Regeer.
Yes. Proxy.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tess.
No.
Representative Wendy Boy.
No.
Chair Jones.
Well, I'll vote no. I get the free vote. Amendment passes 12-11.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 381 as amended once.
Okay, discussion on the bill as once amended. Representative Wendy Boyd.
You know, I'm going to have, as much as I hate to say it, Mr. Chairman, but regardless of doing it, the job needs to get done. So I'm going to be a reluctant yes on this based on that. But, you know, if we could have more people on the ground, if they come back in 2 years and find out that we do need more people, then so be it. But I'm going to support the bill regardless.
Okay. Additional discussion? Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beatty.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Representative Cafaro.
Yes.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Falk.
Yes.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hellegaard.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Aye.
Representative Keough.
Yes.
Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Knave.
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
No.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tuss.
Yes.
Representative Windy Boy.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
Yes. Bill passes 22-1, and we're on House Bill 301.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 301.
It's been moved due pass on House Bill 301. Representative Moore, did you raise your hand? Okay, House Bill 301. Representative Mercer, I know you were working on some stuff on 301.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the bill where we have a challenge with a really large fiscal note that I believe exaggerates what the financial impact is going to be, and I've had some back and forth with the Department of Corrections. They are standing by the fiscal note as written. I had hoped that we could get a lower number because I am worried that it will die once it gets to the Senate. And so I believe that the testimony that we had from the witnesses in the hearing, particularly the head of the Narcotics Bureau at DCI, is good evidence of the fact the fiscal note is too high. But I don't think we're going to get a revised fiscal note as it stands, so I'm going to support moving along, but I worry it is going to meet its demise down the road, given the note.
Okay, additional discussion? Do I need to roll call vote this bill? Is there opposition? 301.
Yeah, I'm a no.
There's one no. Is there more than one no? We can do one more no with a voice vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Representative Vice Chair Cafaro votes no, and we got to call a proxy number.
Representative Regeer votes yes by proxy. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 321.
Okay, the previous bill passed 22-1. It's due pass on House Bill 321. Prior to, I did have an amendment drafted on this bill. I have some folks saying they hadn't had time to look at the amendment, so I'll discuss the amendment. Actually, maybe I'll move the amendment, then I'll discuss the amendment, and I may choose to withdraw it. So if you'd move the amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend House Bill 321 with Amendment HB 0321.001.002.
Okay, the amendment has been moved, and I guess we'll initiate some discussion on the amendment. This is the Coal Trust Bill. If you remember, what the Coal Trust Bill does is it puts about, I'm going to just round $75 million to tops off the school maintenance portion of the trust that's in the Coal Trust. That's the portion that would then begin to pay somewhere around 4 to 4.5% interest. The interest of that goes to match the into the school maintenance fund that matches permissive dollars, more if you're a low-income school, less if you're a high-income school, $4 in one case, one in others. It does, despite the answer by the author, it has to be matched with permissive mills. It does lower permissive mills. Otherwise, the schools can permissive the entire amount. So it does buy down permissive mills, in particular for low-tax value schools. It then, within this bill, swings the spout over to the conservation districts. It puts, and then it proposes the spout or the flow, or which is about 65% of the money that's going into the trust, go into the conservation district block until that reaches $100 million. And then as the bill runs, which would probably take it three years, 4 years, depends on what comes in from coal, that the spouts just return to the main body of the trust. What the amendment does or proposes is that at the request of coal country and the counties, it proposes that we, and again, a future legislature can change our mind, but it proposes the following. It proposes that the folks from coal country came in and they said, we recognize coal's in trouble. It's potentially going away. We realize the funding for our coal impact dollars are going to help that transition may indeed disappear. We'd like to have the nozzle move next to the and create a subtrust called a coal impact trust within the trust that would then be potentially the funding for the coal board or impacts in coal region to help them transfer, help them deal with the transfer from a natural resource economy to potentially the economy that's coming. And then at the end of that, it proposes that it swing back into where it actually originated from when we first moved it to Maintenance Trust, to TCEPT, or they call it something else now, MCA. They always change the names. But it's to the water and sewer section that is distributed in House Bill 5 for to because the amount of money in the water and sewer trust is falling behind inflation. So it proposes a fairly extended future of where the nozzle might swing. Just as we are moving the nozzle, any future legislator can move the nozzle to other areas. But the folks in coal country said, isn't there a point sometime where the nozzle should now swing to us, recognizing that we are the source of this and we potentially are a source that's declining? And, of course, we just proposed throwing it back to water and sewer because that's an ongoing item. We can move this here, or we can let the coal guys move it on the floor, but it's likely that this will be moved. I will entertain some discussion. If there's big concerns with moving it here, we'll let it move on the floor. Representative Hamilton.
I do have big concerns, thank you, Mr. Chair, about moving it here. At the bill as it stands with the move on the school facilities fund and the conservation districts is something that was clearly covered and vetted here, and we had no discussion about the coal board and what they might use this money for, the accountability of it, their plans for it, and if they'd like the nozzle moved over there, I think come on back and let's have a full-blown hearing about it. I'd be more than happy to discuss it with them at that point. I'll be a no with this amendment on here.
Okay, so I'll let the coal additional discussion because I can let the coal guys move it on the floor. I expect it's going on the floor. Okay, I will draw my motion. We're now on House Bill 321 unamended. Discussion on the bill unamended. Discussion on the bill unamended. Questions call, roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
No.
Representative Beatty.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Caffaro.
Yes.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
No.
Representative Falk.
No.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hastings.
No.
Representative Hellegarn.
No.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
No.
Representative Mercer.
No.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Nave.
No.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Yes.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
No. Proxy.
Representative Schillinger.
No.
Representative Tess.
No.
Representative Windy Boy.
Yes.
Chair Jones.
Yes. So, Bill fails 9-14. Can, without objection, reverse the vote to table. Bill is tabled. Next bill, please.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 362.
It's been moved due pass on House Bill 362.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry. I withdraw that motion. That
that's right. There's an amendment.
We have an amendment in edit, and this will be on tomorrow's EA.
So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move due pass on House Bill 375.
It's been moved due pass on House Bill 375. Is there a discussion? Representative Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment HB 0375.001.003. This is a long amendment that basically does one thing. It changes the funding source from the state parks, one of the state parks account in the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, to the bed tax allocation made to the Department of Commerce. After the hearing, I had extensive discussions with the chairman and some other folks here in the building, and they recommended going to the bed tax, indicating that the bed tax had an awful lot of money. It was, according to LFA, it's about $92 million expected in the next biennium. So I move the amendment, and hopefully we will move the bill.
Okay, so this amendment was in your packet from last distribution discussion. Did everyone get fined on the copy of the amendment? Okay, discussion on the amendment. Okay, is there discussion on the amendment? Seeing no discussion, can we do a voice vote on the amendment? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Amendment passes unanimous by those that are present. Okay, move the bill, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 375 as amended once.
Okay, do pass on House Bill 375 as once amended. Discussion? Question's been called. Can I do a voice vote, or do we need to roll call vote, please?
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
Yes.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Falk.
Yes.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hellegard.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
Yes.
Representative Mercer.
No.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Nave.
No.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
No.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
No by proxy.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tuss.
Yes.
Representative Wendy Boy.
Representative Wendy Boy.
Yes.
Chair Jones.
Owes me one.
Yes. Okay, bill passes. I believe that's all the action we can do today, 19 to 4. That's all our action for today. We are waiting on amendments on a couple additional bills. I would ask that you get these amendments as soon as possible. Also, well, we don't have a meeting tomorrow morning. I think Section D is still finishing up, correct? And maybe
yes, sir, Mr. Chair.
Just point it out.
With great haste, I might add.
Okay, well, with great haste. Yes, you're hastily finishing. So we won't have one tomorrow, and I don't think we have any bills for Tuesday afternoon. We will, however, have a meeting Wednesday morning at 8:30. We're going to do a training block with the Senate, and then Wednesday we have some bill hearings and some more executive action. So I don't believe we have any bills tomorrow, correct? No, I think tomorrow... I think I'll wait my EA till Wednesday. So we may do it, some EA either Wednesday morning after our training, or we'll do Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon after our bill hearings. We'll see if people can have their amendments in order by that time. Vice Chair Cafaro.
Mr. Chairman, maybe you already told us this, but House Bill 2 starts after transmittal. Is that right?
I'm going to... we'll have a, it's February, we'll begin on House, we have a calendar there, but yes, effectively, we will have a bunch of bills that get us to transmittal, then we will hopefully hopefully get ourselves cleaned up, then we'll begin to work on House Bill 2. I think we currently have 4 days and one extra potentially scheduled for it, which gives us a spare day going on to the floor. But yes, there is a calendar for the scheduling.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Couple items, but it's also going to be on that. We're going to go through, there's been questions by the new folks on how the state reserves work, the state savings and reserves, and so we're going to try to go through where they came from, where the amounts came from, so folks understand. Here, it'll be 8:30 here, and I think if it changes in the Senate, 317 is available. The Senate may take us up there. They're a bigger room, but right now let's plan on here unless we hear differently. 8:30 on Wednesday. The subcommittee should be done with 317. Okay. So go ahead and we're adjourned.